Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Ray Jenkins, the Iowa Corn Guy. That's at Iowa Corn Guy on Twitter. Also, formerly of Cargill and the Eddyville plant there in Iowa, lives in Melcher and also works now for, sometimes at least, Iowa State Extension. Joe Vaklovic is here. He's from Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois. And Dan Zwicker, Ed Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas, coming to us from his father's home place today in the northwestern part of Illinois. Hey, Ray, thanks for being with us. It's been a long time since we talked with you. What you've been up to since you retired from Cargill, first off?
Well, got grandkids to take care of, got some part-time work, and just enjoy traveling whenever the mood suits me.
And I bet you've been following the corn market because I see you on Twitter talking about both corn and soybeans. What's your assessment of where we stand today?
Well, it certainly seems that our markets have a different feel to them than we've seen for some time. Of course, the fund positions, the short fund positions have been reeled in, and now we get to see the reality of what the South American crop's really going to be.
Dale Durkles, you've been following this pretty closely. There's a fundamental side, there's a technical side of the market. Fundamentally, we just have an awful lot of grain in the United States and across the planet, oil seeds as well, I mean corn and soybeans both.
But in reality, you know, Todd, when you really step back and look at this, we really aren't blessed with what I'll call burdensome supplies of grains anywhere along the way. You know, Dan will remember too, and even Ray, you know, you want to talk about burdensome, let's go back to the mid-80s when in corn we had, you know, stocks to use ratio at 50%. You know, that's burdensome. You know, with the kind of acreage we could have this year, corn and beans both, if you have mediocre crops, corn in particular, you probably pull stocks down a little bit. Beans, with the demand base we've got for proteins around the world, you probably don't build it too much. So, you know, I would really counter these people that want to use the word big supplies. You know, they're ample, they're adequate, but they aren't so burdensome that they can't change awful quickly either.
So, but you're doing that on an historical front longer term, Dale. I would think short term, even with soybean supplies or corn, either one, soybeans more so, the numbers are pretty darn large.
But in one sense, Todd, you've got to go back, and where people lose sight of things is just like looking at the movement of prices today. You know, you take, you know, the kind of price movements we're having here today in beans, for example, you know, you get a 10-20 cent move, you know, and everybody goes, wow, did you see the size of that move? Somebody asked me a question today about the 500-point break in Wall Street, but you got to put it in perspective of where you are in that bigger picture too. And you know, if we're going to have a 400 million bushel carry out or 500 million bushel carry out in beans, we're countering that back against a crop that's up over 4 billion bushel. And you know, people want to point back to past times where we had 500 million carry outs, and you know, we were working with a crop that was 2.5, maybe 3 billion bushel at most. So you know, when you look at the overall structure of the market, you know, the absolute number may look big, but you can't look at it as an absolute number.
I guess, Dan Zwicker, when I was taking a look at the charts earlier today and the 25-cent move, depending on how you set the chart and how far back you go, it looks really steep and really big, but not so much if you start to expand the charts out. That 90 cents to a dollar, probably the same thing in the soybeans. Where do you think we are technically?
I think technically you have to be at the point of being cautious simply because we have had a nice rally through the month or through the winter here. Start off the month of March strong. When you take a look at corn, I'm kind of December corn. I don't think the old crop has, but December corn has returned back to the 50% level, going back toward, I think, last summer's high or whatever it was. I think on the old crop, or at least looking at the old crop cash chart, we got a little ways to go yet before we're at the 50% level. Soybeans, I suppose anytime you get beans above this $10 level, you got new crop beans up here in this 1035 area. The market is overbought. I really don't know what to expect in the market report, but I'm sure it's going to show that we have adequate supply. And it'll probably show that we got adequate intentions to plant beans. But everybody still seems to be kind of worried about Argentina and how much we're going to cut out of the world supply out of Argentina. But when I look, when I combine the overbought technical condition with some of my cyclical timing work, I got to say there is a window here. I'm not necessarily saying today or tomorrow, but I do think we are in the early window here, kind of put in a short-term top, have a setback, and then we'll begin to start finding out, you know, what the intentions are. We'll kind of have an idea how is domestic consumption during for the first 6 months of the year. And we'll look at the April weather pattern and see what that's like. So I guess if I was a farmer, depending upon, I suppose, what kind of financial situation I'm in, but I would be looking at kind of protecting these levels or near these levels, this 404 to 415 on these corn, this, you know, 1036 to 1050 area on November beans. So I think it is a place for some downside price protection.
Hey, Joe Vaklovic, as you've been thinking about Argentina and watching the crop forecasts that have been coming out as those numbers continue to drop, there were two more on Thursday, specifically the drop both the corn and the soybeans there. Are you concerned at all that we're getting to the end of the growing season and that the futures market's already built most of this in to their pricing?
Yeah, I think that that crop is past the point of no return in a lot of instances. I think a good deal of it is. Are some analysts getting too aggressive with production cuts? That may very well be the case. You know, the markets tend to err to the upside. They go too far when we get these sort of crop scare events, and there's just that sort of uncertainty out there. You know, the big thing with the beans is, you know, no matter what happens in Argentina, we've got to pick up our export pace in pretty short order here, really. I mean, if we can't do that and we continue at this lackluster pace, that carryout in the beans is getting bigger. It's not getting smaller. Most of the people that do balance sheet work are going to tell you that, you know, despite the fact that we're going to crush every bean we can crush, we're going to crush at full capacity from now through the end of the marketing year in all likelihood, given those margins. The other half of the demand base is exports, and we're on pace to miss that target by a good 150, 200 million bushels, depending on how you crunch the numbers. So there are some undertones here that are still very, very negative if we can't get this export business going very, very quickly.
Well, I would assume that you have to be pretty concerned, Joe, about the export market moving forward, because every day counts at this point, whether those beans will be coming out of North or South America.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal. And we saw some better exports today, better than expected exports today. We have to see that trend continue. And the one thing that not as many people talk about is that Brazil's got a monster crop on their hands. And, you know, the headlines tend to follow the markets, and that's why we hear more about Argentina. But Brazil is going to have a big crop. It's probably going to be a record crop. And that's something that you're not hearing as much about.
Hey, Dale, I want to come back to the CME Group directly and some things that have been happening in the last couple of days that I don't follow all that often, but I know that you do more than I would, which is the wheat market has really rallied. There's been dry conditions in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Texas, Oklahoma, and parts of southern Kansas, I believe.
Yeah, and you know, that's really been a crucial game here this week in particular across the whole grain sector, but in particular it's been a crucial ingredient of the corn, because as the wheat's continued to move up, and you know, you're talking, you know, 30 or 40 cents within a couple of days here, what you've really done is you've taken that lid off the corn market. And not only have you taken the lid off the corn market here in the U.S., you've helped take the lid off the corn market out there in the world at the same point in time. So this surge in the wheat market, and it's being led by the Kansas City market at this juncture, which it should be led by Kansas City, has been an important ingredient. But when you look at the crops in the Southern Plains, and Dan, you know, living down where he does, you know, could reiterate this, you know, we really haven't started to break dormancy unless you're somewhere central Texas and south. Northern edges of Texas, we may be getting pretty close. You know, but you go into Oklahoma and start to get, and certainly up into Kansas, you really haven't broken dormancy yet. So we've got crops that look poor, but you can't really easily kill a dormant crop. So it's really important to look at what happens with the weather going forward. And as I look today, you know, Kansas City March, which is the nearby, got up to 524 here today. And, you know, you start getting up at 557, and that's the high we had last summer. So, you know, I really question how much more is left to the upside. A lot of the buying this week to me has been funds just finally moving out of the last or their short positions in wheat.
And just to add to this, I know when I talked with Drew Lerner on Wednesday of this week, he was saying, and this would be prior to dormancy, that winter kill might be a problem, especially for some of the irrigated wheat as opposed to the non or unirrigated wheat, simply because it's been so cold, there were some really cold shots through there, but that the dry conditions probably protected, relatively speaking, some of that crop. But the unirrigated might be a fail. And those were his words, not mine. So I want to know, Dan.
Yeah, you just don't know at this point. That's my whole point at this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I irrigated versus not, I can't imagine there are many irrigated versus non-irrigated.
Yeah, a lot of your wheat in Kansas is non-irrigated wheat, although there is some irrigated.
Yeah, that's what I meant. There would be much smaller amount of irrigated wheat. So, Dan, did you drive up through the areas? Were you able to get a look at that crop and kind of consider how much of it's coming out of dormancy at all?
No. We went up through Arkansas because I stopped by SIU, went to the AGR Founders Day week.
Oh, yeah.
And it rained on us all the way through. Now, we got hammered with rain in Waco, Dallas. North Texas got hammered with rain last night. I don't know how widespread it is, how much, but I do know we got some very, very heavy rains. And we got some heavy rains before I left. And I know Texas doesn't really register, but the corn was planted between Waco and Dallas, that Black Plains area, Dallas and Waco. They were planting corn here a couple weeks ago or more. Now, they may have got hammered so bad they're going to have to replant. No, but I do know down the valley, the coastal bend area around Corpus Christi, they've been planting corn there. I don't know what kind of got down there, but I think they've missed any real heavy rains. But I do think North Texas got hammered pretty good here last night. And like I said, I don't know if that went on up in Oklahoma or if Oklahoma got it the night before. I don't know, but we do have a lot of rain. But as far as come out of dormancy, it just hasn't really been warm enough. I mean, Texas has been cold like up here. We've been much colder than normal. all through Texas, like the Midwest, has been colder than normal. So I doubt if there's been much out of dormancy yet anyway, but it's probably going to get close as probably by the time I start heading back, it might.
Let me poll all of you and see if where we stand. So old crop soybeans, I'm going to say everybody is on the side of everything sold or sell it now, and except for those Vegas bushels that you went around. Any dissenters on that one?
Depends on how big a Vegas bushel pile you want.
I'll go with no dissenters on that one. New crop. Is everybody selling into the rally?
You know, I personally told people, you know, get roughly about 20% done. In other words, get the non-insured bushels covered. And beyond that, I'm willing to step back and watch and see how this whole game unfolds. And, you know, you can ask Dan about it, but my count on some long-term cycles tells me not to get too bearish this game.
We'll get to Dan in a second on that one. Ray, where do you stand on?
25 to 30% sold on new crop.
And Joe?
I've been as high as 40 or 50% in some instances, and I'll say that with the caveat that I plan on selling a whole bunch of nothing until we see some sort of weather deal in June or July. I'm pretty comfortable sitting with what I've got for quite a while.
And Dan, I know you generally don't take those kinds of positions, so where are your counts?
Well, cyclically, I can probably be friendly all the way in, you know, into the summer. And I think you have to, from a seasonal perspective, I know I try to make things maybe a little too simple and they get too simple, like lost in the weeds. But, you know, seasonally, very rarely do you make seasonal highs during January, February after you come off of a record crop. I mean, those highs in the growing year or growing season, whatever you want to call it, they come after short crop years, but when we've had several big crops over the last several years, so we never got to any real lofty levels. So I guess seasonally, I still want to kind of be in the camp that the market is going to work more seasonally in nature and climb into those June, July time windows that normally make season highs. Now, with that said, I know, I mean, there is so much noise in this market, just like today's sell-off in the stock market because potential tariffs on steel and aluminum, and then that people are taking it further that this is the first shot of maybe ending NAFTA, walking away with NAFTA. So we're going to hear a lot of bearish news. The dollar did reverse down today. I think those are all friendly longer term. But we're going to, before it's all over with, we're going to be worrying about trade wars. We're going to be worrying about the pulling out the NAFTA. And that's going to make farmers just nervous as hell. So I think they should take positions that give them the flexibility to take advantage of prices that if they go higher, but they also have some downside protection on.
Yeah, so in Chicago, I'm going to ask you, Joe Vaclavic, what is the feeling? Because we have a whole lot of things that are happening. The Secretary of Agriculture out in Anaheim saying things along the lines, and it depends on how you listen to these. Oftentimes, the president's willing to walk away from a deal in order to get a better deal. But oftentimes, if you say you're willing to walk away from a deal, you just walk away from a deal. So I want to know what Chicago thinks about some of the things that are happening, including the president's discussion today, and he'll make a decision apparently next week, but President saying a 25% tax, import tax or tariff on steel coming in, 10% on aluminum, and that could kick off, as Dan alluded to, some kind of trade backlash, whether you want to call it a war or backlash, I don't know, but I'm wanting to know what Chicago thinks.
Well, some people believe that there could be implications for things like the soybean market. They were talking on Bloomberg TV today about China slapping some sort of tariff on imported U.S. beans. So there, I'd say that any of the risk associated with any of this stuff, whether it be the RINs or any sort of trade war with China, if you want to call it that, it's all probably downside risk for the most part. I don't know that there's a whole lot of upside risk in the markets when it comes to this stuff. The trade in general doesn't seem to be overly concerned about any of it, given the price performance that we've seen here the last couple of weeks and today in particular.
That's good news then, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's good news for the moment. I mean, you just don't want to see that big negative headline that, you know, we're going to do something to change the RFS, you know, substantially or something with China. I mean, you want to avoid those headlines, and I think they're unlikely. But, you know, with this presidential administration in particular, never say never.
I just want to say something here. I mean, I drink with some people in some real low places, but I also know some people in some very high places in that Houston area. And this RIN thing is not going to go away. And oil, a lot of money. And so I would just say that the corn growers and the farmers are going to have to, they're going to have to come to some kind of resolution here because it's really plotting or dividing the Trump base pretty bad. That is going to have to be resolved somewhere along the line.
Wait, how's it dividing the Trump base?
Which state gave Trump the most money?
I mean, so if you say voter, if you define the base as voters.
Well, you got to have money to win. And you also have to have your base to win, too. But it's going to have to be resolved. That's all I can say. Now, how it's resolved, I don't know, but farmers are not going to get their way 100% on this thing. They're going to have to give up some ground somewhere along the line because Trump is all about jobs, jobs, jobs. And he does not like the idea that refiners are going broke because of having to pay some ridiculous price for a RIN. And I'm not on one side or the other. The only thing I know is I hang around a lot of oil people, and this thing is not going to go away.
Let me jump in here because there's an important ingredient of all this, and we go back to where this whole discussion about ethanol really started with the new administration, and it really, the base of it, a lot of it has to do with the point of blend. You know, the refiners at this point, and if you go back to T. Boone Pickens when he met with Trump, he wanted to shift the point of blend away from the refiner to the point of consumption, so to speak, or at least somewhere further down the pipeline. And, you know, that takes the burden off the refiner to have to deal with it then. So, I mean, there's a lot of different avenues that this thing can unfold. Does it necessarily have negative repercussions on ethanol when it does, depending on what it is? Who knows? Because there's so many moving parts to it all.
Any wisdom from the guy that used to be inside Cargill?
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Well, I do think that taking the long view, we've got to work on getting infrastructure. We only have higher than E10 blends available in 3-4% of the nation's gas pumps. And if we're going to be able to continue to grow our ethanol industry, it's going to be a two-pronged front. First, exports. Second, ramping up domestic usage with E15.
Well, I don't know that we can solve the problem, but there are plenty of issues that will be discussed, and the market, I suppose, will react. And we'll know partly tonight on Thursday evening how the market feels about what looks like the beginnings of an agreement that happened during the day. Thursday in Washington, D.C. And I won't repeat what I've seen just yet because I don't have any official words on what that might be.
One comment I want to make on this trade concerns, whatever. As long as the United States is the one that has the deficit. Now, I don't necessarily know what the deficit is to Mexico, 75 to 100 billion probably. The deficit to China is what, 400 to 500 billion? I think as long as we are as the deficit, I think Mexico and China can huff and puff all they want to, but I think they need us more than we need them. And so I don't necessarily think we're headed to an all-out trade war, but I do think there's room for some negotiation to narrow those trade deficits. I mean, the United States can't carry a trade deficit around the whole damn world. I mean, we can't afford that. And I guess, Mexico, China, all of our countries that we carry a deficit with, they're going to have to wake up and smell the coffee, too. And things are going to have to be worked out. I mean, it's just like everything have to be worked out. But as long as we have $500 billion deficit with China and $75 billion deficit with Mexico, I don't think they have a lot to say about anything, to tell you the truth.
They have to learn to quit growing their economies on the back of the American consumer. That's it, point blank. You know, another thing that doesn't get discussed, and it really has a lot to do with the value of agricultural products at this point. If you look around and you look at a ratio between the S&P 500 and, various different commodity indices, equity prices are overvalued relative to commodity prices. If you also look at the kind of budget path we have forward, the kind of things that are being talked about at the Federal Reserve level, the one thing you continue to hear and the words you continue to hear coming out of some of these spaces is, are we really going to start to move down a path where inflation really has more of a toehold than what it's had here over the last number of years? And I think when you look at the ratio of equity prices relative to commodities, you really start to have to think about the possibility, is big money starting to move out of equities and moving into other investment arenas? I know we're moving some money into financials. If you look at some of the data that you can get, some money, investment money, is coming into commodities in general. So, we may have some bigger structural changes going on here that people don't readily understand that could offset some of these negative repercussions you're talking about with the ethanol thing, for example.
We probably ought to come back and talk about all the new crop corn before I let you all go. So Joe Vaklevic, why don't you take up that topic? Start with the old crop and make your way to new crop.
Old crop, I mean, there's probably still too much of it out there, although I think a lot has moved or been priced here during this rally. This is probably the time to start cleaning up most of this stuff. And, like the beans, you can sit on, 10 or 15% of it and see if you catch a summer weather rally. I'll also say that in the corn, option volatility is still dirt cheap compared to where it has been historically. So selling cash corn and re-owning is a viable option. And I do that sort of thing very sparingly, but that's something to be aware of, that the options are really, really cheap. And that goes for put options too. If you want to ride this thing out into the summer and see if you catch a weather scare, you can, set some floors effectively. A new crop, so you got a beast board sitting, just below 405 today. I mean, if you're in an area with any kind of decent basis, you've got some storage, you can manufacture a $4 cash corn price, with a 405 board sale, and then, ideally you pick up 20 cents or more, rolling it out to July, you get a little bit of basis improvement, and you got yourself $4 cash. So, I mean, I don't know what the market's going to do, but there's definitely some marketing opportunities available to you.
Ray Jenkins?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised through the winter how well corn basis held up in the month of February, which told me that the farmer had some staying power, and the end users had quite a bit of buying power or buying that they needed to cover. There's still some carry in this old crop corn. It's if people want to lug this stuff out into spring and summer. And I'm still in favor of being about 25% sold on both old and new, probably as a defensive mechanism. I'm sure that a lot of these fellows promised themselves, their bankers, their spouses, that they'd do something next time, and next time is here.
Dan, how about you?
Well, I think 199A has held corn off the market probably more so, and that's been a generally supportive influence to corn. Now, how much of an influence? That's anybody's guess, but I do believe it has held corn off the market. To my understanding, from discussions from people this weekend, the past weekend, some kind of legislation is expected to move here March 21st. I'm not too sure what it is, if it's the spending allocations or what. And they're hoping that they get a fix to 199A in that March 21st legislation that's expected to move. Now, if they don't, everybody's going to be a co-op. They all got their lawyers working on it now. And it's interesting to hear, and I don't want to mention any names, but the people that are kind of in charge of the National Co-op Council or whatever, some of the staff people have kind of, you know, once legislation is passed and then somebody wants to repeal it, you know, then you got losers right away. So the co-op industry really doesn't want to give up this advantage that they have over the private grain companies at the moment. But like I said, if legislation doesn't move here in this March to correct this 199A, everybody's going to be a co-op. So then grain's going to start moving. I think most farmers on new crop have started moving some new crop and some summer sales in anticipation that either the Congress will fix this legislative goof off, or everybody will be a co-op by the time they deliver their grain. So I think as time goes on, we'll see more and more country movement, and I guess we'll kind of go from there. As far as corn goes, oh, I'm sure that March 31st report is going to show plenty of corn around. I think crop insurance is going to ensure that we're not going to see much of a drop in corn acres. December corn, I don't know what kind of average we ended up with for the month of February, but it's got to be somewhere in the 390s, I would guess. So I think that's very attractive to farmers outside of the main growing area that's got cheaper land costs and cheaper ways of cost of production. So I'm not too sure we'll see a decline in corn acres, and I think that could be kind of bearish on that March report.
And Dale, I'll give you the final word.
You know, I think the one thing people need to think about in terms of the corn market, which will help shore this whole thing up, we've got record levels of corn, export corn, on the books to be shipped yet. I'm talking 840 or 50 million bushels at this point. And normally from this point forward, you'll sell another, probably anywhere around 500 million bushels. So you're talking about, you know, you've got a 2 billion bushel plus in the mix as far as corn exports are concerned for this marketing year. And I don't see any way to get out from under that at this point in time. So I think corn stays good. If we do top the futures at this point, the basis will hold up. I like what both Joe and Ray had to say with corn, and that, you know, you basically still look to sell the carry in the thing and collect the storage income out of the corn. And I think that'll pay as we move into the summer. Old crop, I'm a suspicion we're real close to some kind of a high that'll probably hold up between now and summer. So like you said in beans, how much do you want to carry as far as gambling inventory is concerned? And I think that's where you're at. Do you want to hold 20%, 25%, less than that, more than that? I don't know. But I got some short-term cycle counts that tell me, you know, once we find a peak, we're probably going to have a market that could be soft into somewhere in early June. New crop corn is kind of interesting, you know, closing, let's say, at 405 today. The high we had last summer in December corn was 417. You know, we're right up against that at this point in time. And so, yeah, I can sell enough to cover my insured bushels. But when I look back at some bigger things going on in this game, I don't see anything yet that still tells me to be a real huge bear in commodities right now. And that tells me go slow. Don't get too anxious. You know, you look at the acreage numbers the USDA plugged in, and I think if there's anything, it goes down, not up, simply because beans are a cheaper crop to plant than corn is, and beans have been a bit better performer here this winter. You put that up against, you know, let's say a good average yield, and you have corn and, you know, carryouts in the new crop year potentially coming down. So I think the risk is that we have yield that doesn't perform. But to be honest, I think, you know, the discovery of that may be all the way out into fall harvest too. But I'd have non-insured bushels covered. You know, I'm not a big bear, so, you know, above, give or take, 20%, I'm not excited about.
Dale Durkles, of course, is with AgriVisor. Ray Jenkins joined us as well. He's an Iowa corn guy on Twitter and a former Cargill employee, retired after 25 years, does some work with Iowa State Extension now. Joe Vaklevic is with Standard Grain, and Dan Zwicker, of course, with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. Next Tuesday, we'll be at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you enjoyed our discussion today, wait till we get till then. Should be more fun, and you can buy your tickets right now at willag.org. ORG or 800-898-1065. The full agenda is online too. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.